The information included in this podcast is for informational purposes only. Nothing discussed here is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you heard on this podcast.
Hello everyone, this is Victoria Porter. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. You're listening to the Healthy Hot Springs podcast from the Razorback Campercell Studios. Health is our most important asset, and on this show, I sit down with local health professionals to discuss opportunities and strategies for you to get healthy hot springs. Today, I'd like to welcome Dr. Jan Dean. She is a clinical psychologist studying natural dream work. And your office, I believe, is in Little Rock, correct?
Right.
But you are available for telehealth.
Yes.
So even in Garland County, someone can contact you.
Exactly. And,
okay. Well, I'll just let you tell our listeners a little bit about what you're doing. I know we've talked before, and I'm very, very excited to talk about this this dream psychology in my work in grief. I guess every client that I have has some kind of issue with their dreams. So it applies so much in grief. And, you know, of course, it applies in all, right, all aspects. There's so much more to that. But whenever I found out you were doing this, I was like, I just really need to talk to her because there's so much that I don't know. It is a place that I need to do some work. So I'm very excited to have you on here. So, Jan, if you'll just go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit.
Sure. You know, I've been interested in dreams for a long time. And I was in a dream group, sort of a more traditional Jungian dream group for about 10 years. And I was getting more and more frustrated by that sort of intellectualizing of the dreams. And there was some deeper place I wanted to get with my dreams. And so rather than frustrate my dream group, I left. I didn't know what I was looking for until I found a book and read this book called The History of Last Night's Dream. And it's by a guy named Roger Kamenetz. It's hard to say his last name. But anyway, I read this and I went, this is what I'm looking for.
Okay.
So I emailed him.
He said,
well, I'm not working with people, but I have practitioners. So I found somebody, started working with her, and then after a few years of working with her on my own dreams, I said, can I be a practitioner? So I've been training with this wonderful group across the country, and it's sort of more of an embodied way of working with your dreams. That, you know, there's this thing in natural dream work, there's a kind of a horizontal way of being with the dreams, and there's a vertical.
Okay.
And so, and that's what I was always looking for, some depth that I wanted to get to but didn't know how.
Not just the surface of what you're remembering. Like, what, so do you mean, like, what does the dream really represent to me in my life? Is that kind of where you were looking?
When I work with somebody, we go through the dream really slowly.
Okay.
And I ask questions about the characters in the dreams and how they feel in the moments. And so it takes them to a really deep place, and I often have people say, you got all that in this dream?
Right.
Because our dreams bring us, they don't wait for us. You know, when we're in talk therapy, we can talk around things pretty well. But when you have a dream...
There's no... I find a lot of times there's no logical... They're very illogical. Like whenever I have clients talk about, I mean, sometimes it's incredibly disturbing. I'm sure that that is an issue that you have, right? Let's back up a little bit to just kind of a basic, let's go back to just kind of the basics a little bit. So who is your typical client that would come in? Does this kind of evolve from the from therapy that you're going to work on dreams, or do you have people who come specifically for dreams only? Like, how does that dynamic work, I guess?
I have both.
Okay.
Actually, the more people know that I do dream work, my clients are bringing me dreams.
Okay.
My typical psychotherapy clients. But I also have people that call me and say, hey, I'm seeing a therapist, but I'd like to sort of add the dream element.
And I can speak from the therapist's perspective that, right, because I have no training in dream work whatsoever, but it is such a topic in grief work that I feel like I need some training to be able to, competently, right, help my clients with this, or, of course, refer out. And since I've heard about you, I have told a couple of people who are, I guess, disturbed, right? And especially in grief, that can cause you a lot more emotional angst, I guess, right? A lot of issues. Like I have a widow, and like she, in her dream, her husband is always like, she's like, I feel his presence. She's like, it's kind of like he's a shadow standing off to the side. You know, like he's in the periphery. She's like, I never actually get to engage with him or interact, and she's very disturbed by that. Mm-hmm. Which I think compounds her grief, mm-hmm. when she has those. So I guess how would someone who's having dream issues go about starting a process where they would want to seek help for that? Do they have to be disturbing dreams, or,
you know? From my vantage point, yes, there are scary dreams, but the dreams are always in the service of healing.
I love that. Oh, my gosh.
In fact, I just wrote a blog post called Dream Medicine. The dreams bring us medicine. And I recently had a client bring a dream of a deceased person that she had a lot of animosity towards,
right.
And we explored that. And I wondered if this person was in fact bringing her some message or healing about another component of her life.
Okay.
And so we did some healing around her relationship with that deceased member. And I think dreams of the departed are either visitation, you know, or some kind of reassurance. They're maybe bringing some kind of message, or they can bring a trauma. And I've had many people that have trauma issues that have disturbing dreams. But if we look at them, there's often a supportive person in the dream.
Which is comforting.
Which is,
that's
an internal resource that they don't even maybe acknowledge that they have.
And so I would think that whenever we're in that dream, it's hard for us to maybe even realize that there's that protective component, and you're able to help them see that, mm-hmm. as you work through the dreams. How does it work? I know I have a lot of people who say, I just never remember my dreams. Obviously, it would have to be someone who remembers their dreams, right? So if someone never remembers their dreams, does that signify that they're happy, or they just sleep really well? Like, what's your belief in that, I guess?
I think our culture is so fast-paced that we don't pay attention. You know, and so there are ways that, in fact, I had a friend this morning that knew I was coming here, and she said, I don't remember my dreams.
Yes.
And
yes.
I said, well, I have some thoughts. And I said, you know, put a journal near your bed. Put an intention out there that I want to remember my dreams tonight. And, you know, sometimes we wake up and we get a fragment. And then, of course, we go back to sleep.
Right.
And so I've suggested jot down the fragment because that's a dream, right. You know.
And you often think, oh, I'll remember that.
Yeah.
But, of course, you
and then it's gone.
Right.
And I, you know, you can speak, but I did that once and spoke into a, like, a dictaphone, and then I couldn't understand what I was saying, so.
Right. I can see that, too, about note writing. And I just envision my chicken scratching, I guess, on the note. But oftentimes, I think it just takes, like, one or two words to kind of jog that, right? It doesn't have to be completely detailed, or
no.
Is that better to have it as much detail as possible?
Well, sometimes when you write down a fragment, you remember more. But if you don't, I mean, just the beginning, I think our psyche, if you will, if we put in intention and we say, okay, I'm going to pay attention to even this little fragment, we get more.
Yes.
It's sort of developing
yes,
a relationship yes. with the dream world.
Do you find this is a technique that you can, with practice, it gets, you get better at remembering mm-hmm. your dreams?
And I go through periods where I don't remember my dreams, and then I start again, you know, so.
In your practice, like before you started your own dream work, is it a topic that your clients talked about a lot, their dreams and how that plays into our mental health?
Not really.
Yeah.
I think people need an invitation.
And I think, you can weigh in on this, but I think in my experience, I think people are concerned that you're going to think that they're just kind of way out there, right, to be so worried about their dreams, that they can be so disturbed. And I know for me, like, there was a period in my life where, you know, I would define, you know, I'd wake up with night terrors. But it was a time in my life that I felt very vulnerable and, you know, not very secure, perhaps would be the right way to describe it. And after that was taken care of, those night terrors went away. Like whenever I felt more secure and, you know, in my home and things like that. So they matter a lot. In relation to what's going on in our life. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. You know, one of the things during the pandemic, I've had a lot of off and on mask dreams. And recently, and part of it is I've been getting out in the world more.
Right.
Not just because of the pandemic, but as a person with confidence And so recently I had a dream where I was talking intimately with somebody, and all of a sudden I went, oh my God, I don't have my mask on. I might have been infected. And then I realized there was a room full of people, and I go, oh my God, it might be too late, and I put the mask on. But I think it's because it's like it's too late. The gig's up. I'm becoming more vulnerable, and it's just okay. Yeah.
And that certainly relates to this change that we're all going through with, you know, COVID becoming just a normal part of our lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many steps do you take if you have a rock in your shoe? Not many. Well, if you have to walk on a prosthetic leg that does not fit, it is like walking with a rock in your shoe. Although there are many innovations when it comes to prosthetic feet and knees, the comfort of a prosthesis begins with the fit of the socket. Michael Kenny is a certified prosthetist who has been walking on a prosthetic leg since he was 16 years old after losing his leg to a motorcycle accident. He is committed to fitting prosthetic legs so they are comfortable, intimate, and optimize ease of walking. Motility Prosthetics has been in Hot Springs since 2015,
but Michael Kenny has been building legs for over 25 years. All fabrication is done on site. There are no delays from having to ship to a fabrication house. Adjustments can easily be made on the spot. Motility means the spontaneous ability to move. At Motility Prosthetics, we want you to be able to walk on your prosthetic leg with a sense of spontaneity. Call for a free consultation, 501-620-4800.
If you want to talk about the grief element.
I would love to, but I don't want to. If you're fine with that, I don't want that to be our whole topic of the conversation. I want you to, you know, talk about what you want to talk about, but the grief aspect is certainly very, you know, interesting to me. But I don't want that to be our whole conversation if there's other things that you want to include in there too, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I think the grief element, you know, because I've had people, and this was before I was really studying dreams, but I've had people that have had dreams that don't seemingly appear scary to me with their departed.
Like when they are describing them.
Yeah.
To you, they aren't. Okay.
But I think maybe it's their own fear of death and about the departed showing up and, you know, and not knowing what to make of that.
And is it, whenever y'all talk about it, I guess I'm curious, like, what is the resolution? How does the resolution come about that they become okay with that?
Well, in the one person I'm thinking of, I asked, so what about that scary to you, you know?
And once they just kind of start to examine that.
Yeah, then it's just, you know, I said, it might be a reassurance that.
Well, in my experience working with grief, I think the ones that have the most, I'm just thinking right now, so I have a couple who have not dreamed about their person. And it's been a, not a year, but it's been a lengthy period of time. And they're really quite angry about that. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, oftentimes they'll have other close relatives who'll say, oh, you know, I dreamed about their person, and they'll come into me and they're just like, why I want that feeling, right? I want that visit from them to know that, because for the other people that talk about it, it's typically I felt better after that visit from them. It was a comforting experience. So these people are like, I need that. You know, I need that comforting feeling. And they're very angry. And perhaps there's some type of animosity there with their deceased person is, why have you not visited me and comforted me like that? So how would you address that anger?
Well, one of the things I think about is Roger, one of my mentors, said that sometimes it takes a long time for our departed to show up in dreams.
And why is that?
Well, if you're angry and you're sort of wanting it to happen, you're probably less open to, you know, demanding that.
We want control, yeah. Right? But dreams are certainly out of our control, that's for sure, yeah.
But the other thing I think about is sometimes when we're wanting, and this isn't exactly dream work, but if we're really wanting connection and we're wanting it in dream form, we might miss other ways that our departed are connecting with us. And I think about when my father died 2 years ago, I was staying at his house, and the next morning I got a text message from his phone.
Oh, wow.
And I went, and there was no message, but I went, oh, thank you. You know, yeah. And so I think there are other ways sometimes we get messages, yeah, if we're open.
And I will say, I feel like the people that struggle the most are the ones that are less, I'm going to say open, that are less open to the possibility of feeling their presence around them. I know, I think the ones that seem to be comforted the most with their dreams are the ones that, you know, will come in and say, you know, the lights went on and off, and, you know, little things like that, that they attribute to their person, right? Just making their presence known. So I do believe that there is some level of openness. Mm-hmm. And do you agree with that? Some openness to your dreams,
yeah,
to allow that process to happen?
Yeah.
Is there anything you can recommend to facilitate the dreams? I know you said just, you know, kind of putting it out there that I want to have this dream. I know I'm in my grief work, I'm a huge fan of writing. Journaling is huge for grief. So I feel like once you kind of open that, like your emotions, perhaps through journaling or even therapy and talking, that might be a catalyst to be more open to dream work?
Sure. I mean, just even having a picture of their loved one and maybe lighting a candle and having a conversation and just saying, you know.
Okay, whenever you say have a conversation, what does that mean?
Talk to their departed.
And I know this because pretty much everybody that comes in is like, you know, I'll ask them, I'll be like, you know, do you talk to your person? And they're like, oh, yes, but I've never told anybody that because I don't want them to think that I'm crazy, mm-hmm, right? So let's just normalize that, yeah, as part of the process, that it's okay to, especially if, you know, if you've been married to someone for many, many, many years and you've had conversations with them every day. Like, there's an expectation that that's just going to stop. It's really healthy in the grieving process to continue those conversations. And it sounds like you would agree with that.
Yes. And, you know, I think what enters in a lot of times is people's sort of religious,
mm-hmm,
beliefs and that enters in maybe to their openness and their fear. And
how is that something that someone could overcome if they really do want to feel this, to have these dream experiences and feel this presence?
I think maybe their beliefs that it's kind of a beautiful thing.
Okay. Just kind of reframing that to,
yeah,
it's not a... Because I feel like, you know, a lot of religions feel like, you know, miracles happen and, mm-hmm, you know, we can feel and see this presence of God's work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that sometimes we can reframe that, you know, kind of, you know, my person is my angel and that's how I feel their presence, right? If that perhaps is a barrier. Because I know I'm thinking of a particular client, you know, where she was like, I don't believe in ghosts or, you know, anything supernatural or anything like that. And it's really not that, right? You would agree with that?
Yeah.
So how would you, if you have someone struggling with perhaps that, what would you say to them?
I think kind of, you know, again, everybody has their own belief system, but I think on a soul level,
I love that,
we have a connection with people that go, you know, pass over.
And that soul connection is still there.
Yeah.
And tapping into that, into your soul, and that's part of the work that you're helping them do.
Yeah. And it's funny, since we're talking about doing this, my parents have both showed up in my dreams.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, huh. So I think it's kind of interesting if we're open.
We have to allow that. Because obviously you still feel that soul connection to your... I think we all do, right? To our loved ones. It's a difference of being open to it or closed off. So a lot of the work that you do then is to...
I'm just thinking of the person who might be, oh, like, I would really, I have some dreams I'd really like to come and work through. It's, you know, wonderful that there's a person doing that. So what is that process like? Do they need to, like, to come see you? Do they need to, like, have a dream written down? How does that work?
Recently, I started working with somebody that had some recurrent dreams.
Okay.
And so she really wanted to work with me. And so how I like to do it is have them write them up and send them to me.
So you have seen them before. Okay.
And so I have time to sort of be with the dreams and see the connection. Because usually, I mean, one dream's fine, but if you have a few, there's usually some kind of theme that shows up in dreams. And so, and then after I've sort of looked at them, we schedule a time and sort of I start moving through them, and I'll ask questions, and I always give homework. And by homework, I pick a kind of a dream image. And I'll give you an example. Recently, I had somebody that saw her partner with kids playing, and she felt left. She felt like she wanted to join, but didn't feel like she could join because of social conditioning, you know, from not playing growing up. And so
there's so much there, right?
Yeah. So I suggested that she see them playing and touch into her longing to get involved. Just be with the longing. And so I just suggest, like, a couple times a day, just spend a couple minutes with that image and feel into the longing.
All right. And that is so important, because as we both know, I think we as people tend to avoid such feelings, right? We it's like, oh, I don't want to feel the longing. I'm going to ignore that. I'm going to push that aside. And you're asking them to invite that feeling in,
right?
Observe that feeling. Where does that come from? Why am I feeling that way, right? And once you start to, as you say, lean into it, it's not as painful or scary, right?
No, and the next dream often responds to the work from the previous dream.
Really?
Yeah. So it's kind of like breadcrumbs, you know, they're stepping stones.
So you're saying once you start to do this work, you are most likely going to have different dreams,
right,
in response to this work that you're doing on these feelings that you're having.
Yeah.
Is dream work always soul work?
Pretty much, yeah. And that's kind of the vertical, the depth.
Right.
Sort of, if you want to think of it in a different way, I think it takes us, it sort of highlights where we're unaligned with our sort of essence, if you will, like where our social conditioning gets in the way of sort of our authentic self, for lack of a better word.
I love that. And I do think that we can be gatekeepers to the information that we take in. And I mean this in terms of, I know, I can't remember where I saw this, but it was a gentleman who, they had gone into therapy because his daughter was having nightmares at night. Just through simple, you know, kind of looking at their day, he would watch the news at night, and she would watch that she was present whenever, you know, and a lot of times the news is some very scary things that go on in the world. And, you know, she was at such an age that she didn't, you know, couldn't really, well, none of us can, right? I was going to say couldn't really comprehend that, but some things, it's just scary for all of us regardless. But, you know, whenever you have a young child, you really have to be a gatekeeper to what they're taking in. But she was having nightmares at night, and whenever they just simply stopped watching the news in her presence, she was, yeah, she didn't have nightmares anymore. Mm-hmm. So, and I would think that it's true for us as adults too. All this social media that, you know, this constant bombardment, sometimes of very negative images. Do you think that impacts our dreams at night whenever we can get scared or anxious about everything that's going on?
Sure. And I think that's more of our personal reactivity to what's going on in the world. And there's a lot to be reactive about.
So don't watch those types of things as you're getting close to, you know, bedtime and those types of things. And which I think is a really great, whenever you think about setting the intention, like by writing down, you know, perhaps something that you want to dream about and creating that calming space before bed. It just sounds nice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Be intentional about our routines and what we're taking in.
And writing down anything you remember. And I've even suggested if dream figures show up, you might even want to dialogue with them in your journal.
You know? Whenever you say dream figures, that's a particular person that reoccurs?
It could be just they come once.
One time, okay. Yeah. I know my husband and I talk about our dreams sometimes, and he's not one to dream a lot, but I'm a dreamer. I talk in my sleep, the whole thing. And I know that I will often just dream of people that, like movie stars and stuff, will be in my dreams. You know, I watched a thing with Brooke Shields not too long ago, and I had a dream. Or, you know, it was just she was a character in my dream, you know. So, you know, just whatever's going on in my life apparently just shows up. So sometimes, you know, it's amusing to me. It's like kind of like I'm watching a movie, you know. But we've all had our scary moments. So let's kind of segue into give me your information, how people can reach you, and what... When would you, for our listeners, when would you recommend coming and talking to someone about your dreams? Is there a warning sign that perhaps, is it something reoccurring or really scary? Or like what is, who needs dream work, I guess?
Well, I think anybody that's interested in developing a deeper relationship with their dreams, whether it's scary or wonderful or, you know, I'm passionate about dreams. Yeah. And they certainly have helped me sort of navigate through life. So,
and I love this idea of this vertical work, right? It's mm-hmm. it's this, I call it peeling back the onion rug. You know, we go layer upon layer to get to the center of what's really going on. And dream work is that, you know, let's really look at it and see what's really going on, and we'll learn so much about ourselves.
Yeah.
That's so work. Yeah. So, so like we were saying before, your office is in Little Rock,
right.
But you're available by telehealth.
Yeah.
So how would someone get in touch with you?
Well, I'll give you my phone number, 501-240-8869.
And what about Facebook or social media? You were talking about you have a blog, I believe.
Yeah, I just started it, so it's not, if people want, I'll give you my email. I'm just beginning to send it out to my dreamers. So
I love that. Okay.
drjandean@hotmail.com.
And Dean spelled D-E-A-N, right?
Right.
Okay. So Dr. Jan Dean, clinical psychologist, and passionate about dream work.
Very passionate.
Yes. And I commend your work. There's such a need for it. Just from all perspectives, but especially from grief work. So I may need to follow up with you and get some more expertise, I think, for myself. Like I said, I think 100% of the clients that I have had some type of issue with their dreams and grief. So it's so important. Grief dream work. There's a new I think that there's such a need for continuation of work there. You know, there's so much. Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
It's been fun.
Yes. I hope we can do this again and delve into, you know, more dream work topics. I think that it's so fascinating. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Healthy Hot Springs from the Razorback Camper Sales Studios. Join us every Wednesday as we discuss a different topic related to keeping hot springs healthy.